From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The Democratic Party of Illinois should allow its voters to hear more about the candidates for governor and their choices for lieutenant governor before selecting a candidate for endorsement. Now is not the time for the party to be selecting one of the nominees over the other. That denies the voters a chance to really hear from the candidates.
We have one special person in the state of Illinois. That's our Secretary of State, who has touched many people's lives, and not just the adults, but the children. And with that, I want to present to you the next Secretary of State and my good friend, Jesse White.
I was asked, would I use this office as a stepping stone like other Secretaries of State have used this office to move forward in their life, in their political career? And I said that I would run for this office and this office only. I'm true to my commitment. I always want my word to be good.
We don't need to have the Palace of Versailles at our state capitol. And the particular architect here, Mr. J. Richard Elsop III, needs to be reined in by the legislative commission that he reports to.
Some of the comments in state government and politics this week around Illinois. At the beginning, we heard Tom Bowen. He's a campaign manager for Bill Daley, the Democratic challenger to Governor Pat Quinn. And his comments were regarding that the Democratic Party may take part in statewide slating. We also heard Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel introducing Jesse White as he runs for another term as Secretary of State. We heard comments from Jesse White as well. And Governor Pat Quinn on the state capitol renovations that have caused so much controversy and deciding to name the state architect and kind of pin this on him. We'll be talking about all of those things this week on State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Brian Mackey, State House Reporter for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, Mike Riopel, State House Reporter with the Daily Herald out of Arlington Heights, or as it's listed in search engines and movie ads, the Chicago Daily Herald. Welcome to the show today, Mike.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
And we start first with kind of the inside baseball of politics. The Democrats thinking about slating their candidates, and Bill Daley's campaign manager, and presumably Bill Daley don't like that because oftentimes the nod would go to an incumbent such as Pat Quinn. What's the situation here? Why are we talking about the Democratic Party slating, and will they actually do so?
Well, you kind of did a nice summary right there, Bill. So what you have here is the Democratic Party of Illinois, which is pretty rarely gets involved in primaries. I think the last time we were scratching our heads around the press room this week, the last time we remember them endorsing a candidate in a statewide primary was Paul Mangieri, who ran for treasurer, I believe it was, in 2006 and ended up losing to Alexei Giannoulias, who then went on to win the office in the general election. And before that, I'm not sure when you'd have to go back, maybe when Lisa Madigan was running for attorney general. But they rarely get involved in these kind of elections. So you have Governor Quinn, who, as you pointed out, is the incumbent, and his camp says that they do want to be endorsed and to be slated by the state party. He says that he thinks the party ought to stick with its incumbent, basically. Bill Daley's campaign manager, as we heard at the top of the show, says it's a little early. We don't even know who the candidates are going to choose to be their running mates, who they want to run for lieutenant governor with them. They haven't had enough time to present their ideas to the voters, and they do not want this to go forward.
Yeah, one thing Pat Quinn has going for him as he faces all kinds of questions about his leadership and you know, difficulties he's had getting some things done around the Capitol is support of the party infrastructure so far. One thing his campaign talks to reporters and other people about is how 70-some county chairmen all back him in his reelection. So I think he sees, even as all he faces lots of questions, having the party faithful, the party infrastructure behind him, he views as a big strength of his, and having this statewide slighting would just be another point in that direction.
And this, I mean, this pattern already sort of played itself out up in Cook County. He was slated there. Bill Daley didn't even try. He didn't even ask for the slating because he saw the writing on the wall. Now, it's not clear whether he will sit this one out. His campaign manager just said, you know, we think it's too early. And the governor had not yet publicly staked out his position at the point that I spoke to his campaign manager. But it would, I mean, look, it would be a huge upset if the party, statewide party, were not to slate the incumbent candidate for governor. So I think that, you know, if that were the outcome, that would be a big surprise. But they might not do anything. The news release was very careful to say that they are going to consider slating candidates statewide.
Charlie Wheeler, and this committee is made up of 38 people, a male and a female from each of the state's former 19 congressional districts. And if I'm not mistaken, now that we're down to 18, in the coming March primary, we'll elect new committee men, so the committee will drop to 36. But we're talking about this slating session. To me, it's the supreme irony that Pat Quinn would be seeking slating from the state Democratic committee when his political mentor, his godfather, Dan Walker, made such a huge point when he ran for governor in the Democratic primary in 1972 against Paul Simon, of saying that Simon sought the slating from the Democratic Party officials, which Walker equated to being making Simon a puppet of then-Chicago Mayor Richard J. Daley. And so now, you know, moved down through the decades, and now it's Pat Quinn who's going before the Democratic, they used to be called kingmakers, they're not anymore, but asking for their official endorsement. And it's the son of the late Mayor Daley who is arguing, no, we should have an open process. So it's like things are standing on their head.
And what do you think they'll end up doing, Charlie?
Normally you would say that Quinn would not have asked for this because, as Brian says, if he doesn't get it, it's a huge embarrassment without having carefully counted noses to know that he's got at least a majority, if not virtual acclamation, among those committee people that they will be voting to endorse him. On the other hand, there have been other issues where the governor has claimed that there's the votes to do one thing or another, and when push comes to shove, they don't materialize on the board. So
we don't know, I guess.
No, and I suppose the and Michael Madigan, the House Speaker, who's also the chair of the Democratic Party, is going to have a huge hand in this. And it might be something of an irony if the Speaker were to say, as the head of the party, well, you've requested this endorsement session, but looking back on some of the comments you've made in the past, we've decided that it would be better for us not to get involved.
And I noticed Secretary of State Jesse White just says he's friends with both of them and would not jump in that fray. We have Jesse White running once again for Secretary of State and saying he kept his promise, Brian Mackey, of not running for higher office beyond this, but there was another promise or statement that maybe he didn't hold so true on.
Yeah, so this would be, if he's elected again, and he has been one of the most successful statewide candidates, arguably, in Illinois history. I mean, I don't know, can't go back to the 1800s, but, I mean, he won, I believe, in one of his elections, he won all 102 counties in Illinois, which is pretty remarkable when you think about how Republican some of the areas are downstate. But, yeah, he said last time around, I believe, in 2010, that would be his last term, his fourth. He's currently in his fourth term. He's been in office since 1999. And now he's going for a fifth term, which would be pretty remarkable. So he says, yes, he did not use the office of Secretary of State as a stepping stone to run for higher office, as some of his predecessors have, like Jim Edgar and George Ryan. But he did. He is trying to stick around for yet another term in office.
And I think the comment he made, at least it was reported at his Chicago announcement, was the fact that he used to jump out of perfectly good planes and he didn't stop halfway down. And so he wanted to carry on with the mission. And, of course, he was a paratrooper back in the day during the Korean War. And he apparently feels that there are still things he wants to accomplish. He's been in the forefront of trying to tighten up rules on distracted driving. trying to get the law changed so that you can't text while you're driving. You can't use a cell phone in construction zones, things like that. He's been also very active in the organ donor area. And as a matter of fact, the Secretary of State is an office that interacts with people on a daily basis, probably more frequently than any other one in the state of Illinois, because they handle the driver's license, they handle the vehicle licensing, and they have offices all across the state. I believe there's a Secretary of State's office in every one of the 102 counties, and in the larger counties there's multiple ones. And so there's the opportunity, if you give good service, to have people like you, even though you may be a Democrat in a Republican area or vice versa. On the other hand, there's also the opportunity to get in a lot of trouble, which is what happened to George Ryan. And Jesse has been able to steer clear of that pretty much.
There's also the opportunity to hand out state contracts and in those contracts, essentially jobs for cash and with no benefits. They're not employees, but a lot of people get to get a contract from the Secretary of State's office to perform some duty, and you control a lot of other jobs on Illinois' payroll.
You don't have as much control as it used to be, though, because over the years, when there's going to be a change of administration, an incumbent Secretary of State of one party would try and lock in his people in civil service so that they couldn't be booted when the next person from another party came in. There have been Secretaries of State of both parties who've done that in my memory.
And that's why I think the contract part is where they get to help a lot of friends.
But it's not nearly as significant as the contract, the ability to give out contracts that exists or used to exist in the executive branch with the governor's office. Although the procurement codes have been tightened up pretty much in the wake of some of the Rob Blagojevich stuff, so it's not as easy to dole out that pinstripe patronage as it used to be.
And at the Capitol, they're still trying to find a Republican candidate that will go up against Jesse White.
Yeah, that's true. That and in the attorney general's race, I don't think we've heard any Republicans willing to take on these two very popular incumbents who have pretty much decimated their opposition in recent elections. So it remains to be seen whether there will be a sacrificial lamb. Of course, if you are a Republican willing to step up and throw yourself in front of the oncoming train of some of the more popular Democratic incumbents, there can be political rewards later on. Steve Kim, who ran against Attorney General Lisa Madigan in the past, ended up now he's been selected to be the lieutenant governor candidate for Republican Dan Rutherford, who's running for governor.
And Dan Rutherford in 2006 ran against Jesse White and then, you know, was able to use that the recognition from that campaign to win his campaign for treasurer 4 years later. And now 4 years after that is running in the primary for governor.
And speaking of throwing people under a train this week, Governor Pat Quinn kind of threw the state architect under the train. That'll be coming up on State Week.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and the Daily Herald's Mike Riopel. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Well, in the past week, controversy and political talking and sniping and complaining have continued to go on about some of the renovations at the Illinois State Capitol and the bright penny of it all, the copper-plated doors at the Illinois State Capitol. And the three sets of copper doors each cost about $220-some thousand each. And Governor Pat Quinn this past week halted funding for future renovations until a review of the expenditures is done. What's kind of interesting, he came out this week and named the state architect by name. His full name It almost seemed like he was willing to give out his home address and phone number and target this gentleman as the culprit for this.
Well, it's kind of amazing symbolism when you think about it, and sort of a sharp political barb. But the architect of the Capitol, that's the person we're talking about here. His name is, we know him as Richard Alsup. Richard, that's what he goes by. But I guess on paper, when he signs his formal signature, it is J. Richard Alsup III, which sounds a lot more aristocratic, I think. And as we've seen, Governor Pat Quinn is trying to set up this populist campaign. He's been calling his rival Bill Daley a former banker. He's been playing up Daley's role as a Midwestern chairman for one of the big banks in the, you know, right before the big financial crisis about 5 years ago. He's been talking up the minimum wage. So I think this just fits into the image Pat Quinn is trying to portray of himself as looking out for the little guy, fighting those rich aristocrats who want to, you know, keep you from getting a higher minimum wage and install ridiculous copper doors on the state capitol. I mean, I'm not saying that's right. That's just how he is trying to portray this.
Meanwhile, in the same campaign, one of his top three, you know, proudest points is that he was able to get a capital bill done that Rod Blagojevich never was. 2009, huge construction program, $31 billion. I was able to get this done, put people to work, you know, get roads built, fix schools. Of course, in that bill that he's had championed and bragged about was the money for the capital renovation. Now, it never said in that bill anywhere, you know, $600,000 for copper doors at the Capitol. It was $50 million for renovations of the wing for whatever they needed to do. It's just interesting that on one hand, one of his top, you know, bragging points, and now on the other hand, he's kind of had to fight back up against part of it.
And, you know, this is the interesting thing here is, so who is ultimately responsible for choosing these doors? These doors, you know, rightly or wrongly, they've become kind of a hot button issue. A lot of newspapers have editorialized in outrage about the expense of not just getting the simple aluminum and glass doors that we used to have, and instead going with these copper plated doors that are meant to invoke the building's original period of construction from the late 1800s. And the question is, who is responsible for that? So the Office of the Architect of the Capitol reports to something called the Office of the Architect of the Capitol Board, which is comprised of the Secretary of the Senate, the Clerk of the House, and their assistants. And they put out a statement today basically saying that this is all something that the governor, you know, he approved the overall legislation, as Mike pointed out, to fund this. They wanted to restore the building. Most of the restoration and work was about life safety issues, adding stairwells, putting in sprinklers, that sort of thing. And that since they were doing that, they decided to try and bring in these historic touches as well. And they say that this is just a kind of a political point scoring going on here.
And while we are recording this show, that group is meeting. So if for some reason some action would come out of that meeting, we would not have that. But they did issue that statement going into the meeting defending their role. They're pretty much, as you were explaining, they are controlled by the legislative leaders.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Charlie.
I was going to say, the clerk of the House and the assistant clerk, the clerk's a Democrat, the assistant is a Republican, and the secretary of the Senate is a Democrat, the assistant is a Republican, and that's the way it's been from time immemorial. They divide up those two top spots, administrative spots, in each chamber. So
and
all
even,
the leadership had representation.
And it's even more, I would say, slanted a little more now because the clerk of the House used to be just somebody who was appointed. Now it's also the person who has Michael Madigan's chief of staff, a guy named Tim Mapes. So he is even more tightly controlled with the leaders. I shouldn't say he's controlled. He has a lot of power in with House Speaker Mike Madigan. And so he is, you know, on this board. It's not as though this is just an architect who is making these decisions and spending the money with zero oversight, I think, would be.
And what I suspect happened, obviously I wasn't there, I suspect the architect was told, here is what we want to do. We have to renovate for the heating, the air conditioning, making the West Wing conform to the standards of the Americans with Disability Act, the ADA, and all these upgrades are needed. And while we're doing it, why don't we try and restore the building to its original beauty? We've already done that, for example, in the House Chamber. The House Chamber some years ago was renovated to look as it appeared, I guess, in the late 1800s. And so the thought was, let's make the West Wing look that way too. And I'm sure the architect did his utmost to try and make it as accurate a replication as possible. And he had an overall budget, and he stayed within it. I don't think he paid particular attention to the cost of individual components. It's not only the doors. There are also chandeliers that are in the hundreds of thousands. There's a couple of statues. He was trying to, in essence, recreate it as it had been. And I would disagree with Governor Quinn. It may not be the Palace of Versailles, but it is the palace in Springfield and in Illinois. And it's not a palace for the people who temporarily occupy it, but rather it's a palace as the seat of state government. It's a gorgeous building. It has a lot of historical significance. And as I said before the show, I may be the only person in the state of Illinois who isn't horribly offended by the fact that we had to spend a lot of money to make it look as true to the original concept as we could.
Now,
Go ahead, Brian. I was just saying, I'm inclined to agree with you, Charlie, and I was very sympathetic early on to this idea of, you know, this is a public building. It is a historic landmark, a national historic landmark. It is visited by hundreds, if not thousands, of school children every year, and tourists come through it and look at the beauty of this sort of monument to democracy in Illinois. And I completely understand that. And yet, I have to add that if I am a prison guard with 20 years in, if I'm a school teacher who's been showing up for work every day for 30 years, and I hear about lawmakers who want to reduce my pension benefits, I can understand where people would be outraged about this. Or if I'm just a taxpayer who is paying ever higher tax rates, you know, through property taxes because the schools aren't properly funded by the state. I mean, we can get into a whole long discussion about the ongoing revenue problems in the state of Illinois and the overall budget structure problems. But I think that if you are anyone who is affected by the spending problems in state government, and true, the money for this renovation is from a separate pool of money. It's not as though this is taking textbooks out of the classrooms or anything like that. Yet I can understand where people are outraged about it.
Now, Charlie Wheeler, you have also made public your view that you wish maybe State House reporters or somebody would be focusing on some other issues. And one that comes to mind, you said, involves a critic of the state's pension system.
Yeah. I found it interesting that there has not been nearly as much coverage given to what I consider a terrible breach of breach of faith on the behalf of a gentleman named Ty Fainer, a former appointed attorney general of the state of Illinois, who represents one of the groups in Chicago that has been most outspoken in terms of trying to reduce the cost of pensions by reducing benefits. And he, back last spring, was videotaped in a speech in which he talked about how his group had gone before the bond rating councils or the bond rating agencies to try and goad them into lowering the state's credit rating because the state hadn't acted on pensions. At the same time, the law firm of which he was former head and is still a partner, Meyer Brown, has more than $1 million, if I recall correctly, in fees from the state as its bond counsel. So it strikes me that this is a terrible conflict of interest. You're taking money from the state to promote or to be its legal advisor on its bond sales. At the same time, you're going behind the state's back and bad-mouthing the state in an attempt to get the credit rating agencies to lower our credit rating, so that we wind up having to pay more for those very bonds you're supposed to be helping us peddle. So that strikes me as the kind of major story that I think should have gotten more attention, at least as much as the Capitol renovation. But I haven't seen it in the Chicago papers, and I don't know if I've not read them carefully enough, but it doesn't seem to have gotten the traction that that the renovation has.
And, you know, Ty Fainer is as responsible as just about anyone else, I think it's arguable, that for sort of framing the pension debate we've been having for several years now and sort of projecting that the idea here is how deep do we cut employees and retirees' benefits. I mean, there are other ways of solving the pension $100 billion projected shortfall. You could raise taxes, you could do other things, but I mean, he, as much as anyone else, I think, is responsible for looking at this as an issue of let's cut the benefits and go about it that way.
Yeah, to the extent he took sides in the fight to become the next House Republican leader, he, you know, was again, State Representative Raymond Poe of Springfield versus Jim Durkin of DuPage County, and he basically came out and said, you know, you have to back Durkin or there's going to be less business support for your campaign. Poe supported, does not support the same kind of things Fainer does as far as pensions go.
And part of it is that Raymond Poe is a representative from Springfield, where a lot of his constituents are state workers. And so, as representatives are supposed to do, he was reflecting the views of his constituency.
A little bit of time remains in the show, and we'll take some notes from the field, and we'll start with Mike Riopel.
Well, this this copper doors thing, you know, the last week or so, is the second major copper story in Springfield on a historic building in the last couple of years. In 2011, somebody stole the copper sword in the hand of a statue at the Lincoln Tomb out in the cemetery. So who knows what will happen in 2015 with copper.
And we don't know how that will affect the market prices.
That's right. Yeah,
for copper, Brian Mack.
I wonder if they're going to have a guard posted on those doors at all hours of the day. Copper's a hot commodity.
I would assume they're heavy enough that it will be difficult to walk off with. But
get some
tin
snips and yeah.
I wanted to talk about a case that was argued before the Illinois Supreme Court this week. It looks at, you know, when does a clever business strategy morph into illegal tax evasion? There was a company based in the Cook County suburb of Forest View that sold fuel oil, and they would get orders from their customers by fax, but they located their fax machine 100 miles away in Putnam County in a very small town of Illinois called Mark, 555 population. I have to admit, I had never heard of Mark until this case came up. And by doing that, they were able to lower the tax rate on their fuel by 2.5%. And so the Illinois Department of Revenue approved of this process for a while, but in the mid-2000s, they did an audit and decided that this was no longer something that this company should be doing. The company paid $23 million in taxes and fines and is now suing to get the money back. It's going to be interesting to see where the court goes on this.
That's all the time we have for this week's edition of State Week. I want to thank Mike Riopel of the Daily Herald for joining us today. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for today's program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.